Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm Brianne from the future. I'm violating the temporal prime directive to be here today. Don't tell Starfleet.
Hi, I'm Violet. My pronouns are she, her. I have ADHD. And if I was a Star Trek character, I think I'd probably want to be a Trill, except for the whole worm part. That feels kind of weird. But the whole, like, you've got a whole bunch of memories of being another person. I don't know. I vibe with that.
Being a trans person, you know. You have to have the worm to have that happen, though. The worm is the one that holds the memories.
I know. But the idea of having a worm inside me, I don't know. Depends on the worm, I suppose. I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe the worm and me could learn to get along.
Oh, yeah. You would become one with the worm.
The spots are cool, too. Could you imagine me with spots?
I could imagine you with spots. They go all the way down. Those spots go all the way down.
They would.
If you haven't guessed, we're talking about Star Trek today. But I needed to get... So, Star Trek is one of my longest, deepest, most enduring special interests. I get so excited about it. When I see trailers for new seasons of Star Trek, I pretty reliably just start crying, not because there's anything emotional, but because my autism gets so fucking excited at the prospect of new Star Trek. I get so happy, I start crying. So, I want to... It has been nearly 2 years of Info Dumpies, and I have not yet blown my load on Star Trek. Because I knew I didn't want to just have an episode about Star Trek. I wanted to get specific so I could have many episodes about Star Trek, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes total sense.
Such an expansive franchise that it would take... There's so much that you could talk about, too.
Right, exactly. Like, Elden Ring, for a standalone thing, has a lot of lore. Star Trek has... I mean... infinitely more lore than that, right? And I would say, from an outside perspective, Star Trek is probably your biggest special interest. I feel like one of them, at least.
Yeah, no, it might be my biggest one. Like, I have two Star Trek tattoos. I'm planning on getting more. It shaped who I am as a person. But today we're going to talk about something very specifically. And I already know what I'm going to title this episode, and it is a little reductive. The title, but this is my perception, is that gay fanfic saves Star Trek.
You don't have to convince me. I'm already there. I feel like that just sounds right in my heart of hearts.
So Star Trek has always been a franchise that really relied on fans. It was just this little show. It was weird. There was nothing else like it on television. It was going to be canceled after the second season, but... And I would be remiss not to mention this person who has nothing to do with gay fanfic, but without her and her husband, Star Trek would not be here. Also, she has a first name that I've only read, and I've never said it out loud, and I was trying to look up pronunciations, and I don't know, but it's B-J-O, like B-J-O, B-O,
B-J-O. Oh, not like an abbreviation, just all one word?
Just all one word. But the Trimbles, Mr. and Mrs. Trimble. So Star Trek was going to be canceled after season two, but they started a letter writing campaign. And this is like in 1968.
Oh, wow.
67, 68. They organized a letter writing campaign without the internet to get people to write in about this weird little space show so it could get a third season. Now, it was still canceled after the third season, but now it had enough episodes to be put in syndication. Which is the important part for the gay fanfic, you see. Because syndication would keep the show kind of alive in people's minds because they could see reruns of Star Trek now.
Exactly.
If they missed the first run, you could watch the show again. It was in syndication when I was a kid still. It's probably in syndication on some regular TV. One of the things that I tell people about autism being genetic is that my biological father would set the VCR to record Star Trek the original series when it came on at like 1 or 2 in the morning and recorded all of them in order on VHSs and made his own special covers to tell you what the episodes were and episode descriptions and had them all organized on a shelf. So because of B.O., Bajot, God, if someone can find how to pronounce her name, I feel awful that I don't know. I've seen it written enough times, but not Bajoran workers. Because of that letter writing campaign, there was enough to keep it in syndication. Where do we get to gay fanfic? Well, when Star Trek was airing, and afterward, there were a lot of people who saw Kirk and Spock romantically. They saw the depth of their relationship, they saw how they'd sacrifice themselves for each other, and there were letters written to Roddenberry asking about their sexuality. It birthed what many fan fiction experts say is very likely the first slash fic.
I
don't think you're super familiar with fanfic. Do you know the difference if you're looking at fanfic, if you see something that says Kirk and Spock or Kirk slash Spock?
No, I don't. Not a clue.
So slash fiction, when you see the slash, you know, here lies gay shit. If it's just and, that is general adventure and friendship.
Okay, so if it's, you know, Super Mario, Peach, and Daisy, they're just two gals hanging out. But if it's Super Mario, Peach, slash Daisy, I need to clear my browser history.
Yeah, so slash indicates gay stuff. It very Amazing. Likely started with Star Trek.
I have one very quick final question as someone who's very new to all the terminology of fanfics. Is slash unique to homosexual content? Or is it just erotic sexual romantic content?
Homosexual.
Okay, good to know.
Slash is homo. Slash is gay.
Slash is gay. Slash is homo. Not just sexual. It's also gay. Good to know.
Okay, so Star Trek birthed slash fiction. You'll see it abbreviated. You'll see it be the full Kirk slash Spock or K slash S, or they'll just make it. It's such an iconic franchise. You can just write Spurk, and people know what you're talking about.
That sounds like a sound effect that would happen in the middle of a slash fic.
So, yeah, so there's you're going to make me spurk. So there is a slash fiction, there is a fan fiction expert, which I would love to meet this guy, Henry Jenkins, who says that Spurk might be the first slash fiction pairing. So people were watching the show in syndication, and this is before the internet. They were sharing their fanfic. Archive of Our Own didn't exist. So organize sharing this shit with each other. Right. So there are some other things that kind of fueled the fire of the gay stuff in Star Trek, even after the show went off the air. So after Star Trek, the original series, went off the air, there was in 1979, you had Star Trek, the animated series, was its return. Followed by Star Trek The Motion Picture, which is probably my least favorite Star Trek movie, but it gave Star Trek, it was the start of the return of Star Trek. So we wouldn't have Star Trek The Next Generation without the popularity of those movies. Oh. So in the novelization for Star Trek The Motion Picture, Gene Roddenberry, so this is me basically arguing that I do think they're gay. Gene Roddenberry uses a Vulcan term called T'Hyla to describe the Spurk relationship. This means friend, brother, or lover. And there is a footnote by Captain Kirk, the character, where he has clearly talked to Spock, who has said people think we're lovers. And Kirk essentially said, I wasn't aware people thought we were fucking. Like, pretty much the TLDR. He's like, right. I usually fuck women. And there's very much an implied usually. Yes, it's something like, I usually find the comfort of women most, you know, something. I was like, oh. So you've tried stuff. But then he jokes, why would I pick a sexual partner who only reaches sexual heat every 7 years?
Ponfar,
yes. Which I would also argue that Ponfar is when they're making baby Vulcans and they can fuck whenever they want. But whatever, that's... Gene Roddenberry also wrote about the sexual habits of a lot of different alien species because he was a little freak ass, and that could be an episode all in its own.
I think the logical thing would be for Vulcans to have a functional copulation and a recreational separate version, right?
And like a relational logical. One. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A social one, essentially.
When asked about it, Gene Roddenberry said it was never overtly suggested on the show, But when looking at their relationship, he intended theirs to be a deep love, which he said would be sufficient enough to support the physical act of love between the two. But he doesn't know if they would have done that.
I mean, I feel like that is pretty cut and dry. I mean, that's pretty much him saying they could have fucked. I just didn't write that specifically.
Yeah, he said he wanted it to be very close to like the Greek ideal where these two men would be such deep, 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 balls deep friends that they fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just two bros fucking each other as bros do.
Just a little dick sucking between the boys. That takes us a little further into the future, but I'm going to roll back to the very first known Kirk-Spock fanfic. And I'm going to lead into why this helps save the show. So there was no internet. Again, there was nobody to share their edits on Tumblr. There wasn't stuff to keep the show in the cultural zeitgeist unless people made a huge effort to do so.
Gotcha.
Right? It wasn't just easy to reblog something. It wasn't just easy to make a fan cam of Kirk and Spock. Like, you didn't have all of this stuff. It was analog and you had to go find people. Like, when I was a teen, I got in trouble for running up a really high phone bill on our dial-up internet, for being on it for hours, talking to older people on Star Trek forums about how disappointed I was in Star Trek Enterprise. It has even been, it's been made so much easier to talk about Star Trek with people in my lifetime that I can't imagine how hard it was to find other Trekkies back then.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about...
It was hard to just find it was hard to just find a chat room back then that wasn't just a bunch of weirdos.
And I was talking to a bunch of likely autistic adults in their 30s who talked to me like an equal in my opinions about Star Trek, because it's just, I love other Trekkies. It's so much fun. So Diane Marchant, she wrote the first known Spurk fanfic, which was called A Fragment Out of Time. And it was in the fanzine Grup number 3. Now, the story doesn't call the characters by name at first. Diane admitted it was Spurk in the following issue of the zine. The story was only 500 words long. And she included a drawing she did herself of Kirk and Spock embracing.
Oh, that's excellent. So there was Spurk in the Grok magazine?
Grup, G-R-U-P.
Grup. So yeah. So she spurked in the grup.
She spurked in the grup.
She spurked in the grup and then drew a little picture of it.
Marchant didn't invent this pairing or the interpretation of their relationship as being homoerotic by any means, but hers might be the first homoerotic spurk fanfic that was shared for public consumption and not just between horny Trekkie friends.
Right, right, right.
There was no AO3 back then, so she was sharing her fanfic with people. The way they did fanfic back then was these magazines would come out, and instead of waiting for it to update on AO3, you would wait for your next issue, for your next chapter of your fanfic to come to you. And they had whole novels worth of fanfic through these zines. Like, you would get, it was analog fanfic.
It's wild. Uphill both ways in the snow. It's wild. And it was just words and an occasional picture in a grup.
An occasional drawing in a grup. But we can see from letters from fans sent in when the show was airing in the 60s that everyone thought there was gay shit. But thanks to Diane, she kind of broke the seal on this. And more fanfic about the relationships in the show boomed. An interesting thing is that most of the Star Trek fanfic was not about actual science fiction. The fanfic, like most fanfic today, is focused on relationship pairings and the interpersonal stuff.
What we call shipping now, right?
And not even what we call shipping now, yes, but also things that don't even have to be romantic.
Hmm, okay.
Like, it doesn't even have to be a romantic pairing. It can just be your two favorite characters having a platonic adventure where these platonic friends grow closer and have some fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Regardless of whether or not they're sexual content, it is usually focused on relationships between characters.
Got it.
So most of the fics were about Kirk and Spock. Most were homoerotic. And just a couple years later, after Diane did this in 1974. So the show had been off the air since 1969. But she did this in 1974. The first Kirk/Spock fanzine appeared in June of 76.
Oh, wow.
So she helped usher forth a zine specifically for this Kirk/Spock stuff.
That's really cool.
So by 1987, Spurk fanzines were the more popular. So there were 30 Spurk fanzines existed to the 47 non-Spurk. So
They
were just general fanzines, right? And there were 47 of them. But there were 30 that were specifically just for this pairing. So there was kind of a verbal test when talking to other Trekkies to see if they shipped Kirk and Spock in a gay way. So Trekkies would tell each other, oh, yes, I enjoy Star Trek. I really enjoy the premise.
Oh,
so the premise was that Kirk and Spock were gay. So if someone else said, I also enjoy the premise, you knew it was okay to be, all right, so they're gay and they're fucking and they're in love, right?
Right. Gotcha.
That was your way to test.
Gotcha. It was the tongue-in-cheek way of saying, I like Star Trek and also Spock and Kirk are gay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a way to check without saying, do you like reading about gay space sex?
Well, obviously the answer is going to be yes for me, so.
Interestingly enough, most of this fic was written by women.
I could see that.
And there's been a lot of academic research and academic takes on why women, and not necessarily all queer women, there were a lot of straight women writing this, why they were the ones that birthed this slash fic, right?
Yeah, that is really interesting, actually. I hadn't considered that.
Some say that it wasn't the homosexuality between them, but the idealized relationship between true equals that women of the time found really appealing.
That makes so much sense. That really does.
They would both sacrifice themselves for each other. Yeah. Kirk would say often, like, the only thing I'm married to is the Enterprise. But then he would put the Enterprise in jeopardy on the regular just to save Spock. Spock would defy his logical upbringing to do things for Kirk's sake and show big emotions for Kirk. Yeah. While they both respected and admired each other and were confidants. So there were a lot of people that said, especially for the time, that is the thing that women found most appealing, was that they were true equals. And that was not something you could find in hetero relationships in media at the time. You simply couldn't. So queer content was not allowed on television.
Gotcha.
So there wasn't queer stuff that you could see on television that was overt. There was stuff that could be implied sometimes, but it was so puritanical, and homosexuality was illegal in Texas until I was 13.
Right.
So even in our lifetimes, It has not been allowed in one way or another.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget that sometimes.
Yeah, so even in the 60s, finding a hetero relationship on TV for someone who's looking for a hetero relationship, they were never equals.
Right, exactly.
Right? They always had so many of these roles. And then some say that the radical acceptance in the Star Trek universe allowed fanfic writers to feel empowered to queer their favorite piece of media. Because the nature of the universe that they're writing fanfic about was accepting of, not only accepting of all differences, but cherished differences being important.
Right.
Like, Star Trek has the infinite diversity and infinite combinations baked into the ethos of the show.
Exactly.
So they felt that, so a lot of experts on fanfic say that Star Trek kind of created the perfect environment for people to queer their fanfic pairings. And, like, fanfic is not a new thing. We did an episode on Dante's Inferno, right? And that's fanfic.
Yeah.
That's straight up fanfic. It's just really old. But this is the first with, like, television media we really saw it.
Yeah.
So the first slash fic gets published in 1974. The show had been off the air since 1969. There was no internet or easy access to the show other than catching it in syndication. It had just enough episodes to hit syndication, but it was really niche. And my argument is that these early networks of fans kept the show fresh in people's minds, offered engagement, created a subculture that was powerful enough that the idea of bringing the show back was visibly viable to the people in charge. Because without the internet and other stuff, how did people back then see, like, oh, if we want to do a revival of this show, people are still interested.
Right.
But they could see people were doing all of this stuff just to talk about the show. Yeah, they were doing letter writing campaigns. Trekkies are so involved. I think most of us are autistic. So when we get really into something, we're going to put our whole pussy into it, right? Like, we are. Yeah. We just really are.
Yeah, and I feel like once something has developed enough of a fan base and enough appreciation by people, but especially the autistic community, when it's become a special interest for a lot of people and it leaves its original medium in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. some of that stuff, and I feel like it's underappreciated how much of that kind of becomes, I guess for lack of a better term, kind of a cultural touchstone for a lot of people. Like, like this is there's an entire community centered around this thing, not just for autistic people, just for people that love this thing. And I think a big part of that to thank is the autistic community for saying this is beautiful and we love this and this is amazing.
And the horny women and queer folk who made these zines to help keep it alive.
Exactly.
So you'll notice I've mentioned fanzines, but there were other things people were doing. The same people who made these fanzines, there are things they were doing to keep the show alive even more. The same fans would organize letter writing campaigns again to bring the show back. Mm-hmm. They would put on conventions themselves.
Oh, wow.
So these conventions were also where some of the first fan vids of TV shows happened.
Fan vids of TV shows?
Yeah, so when you're a mega fan of something, people will make fan vids where they do edits of things to make it like, look at this Kirk Spock pairing to Paula Coles. Where have all the cowboys gone? There'll be music. It'll be edited. Today there's fan cam stuff that people do. Like, fan cams for K-pop have Star Trek to thank for
that. Right, right. Like AMVs for anime and stuff like that.
Yeah, Star Trek birthed that.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
These people would they'd have to do it like analog to make these, right?
Wow.
And they very often would clean up the audio and sound stuff too while they were doing it to make it better.
I love autistic people.
Yeah. So some of the first was made at with favorite Trek pairings, like Spurk, at conventions in the 70s. The first Star Trek convention happened in 1972. Wow. Can you imagine the effort people would have to go to organize a Star Trek convention that you would have people show up to pre-internet?
My God, I can't. I genuinely don't understand how you get like turnout for something like that. Like, I don't know if you have this on hand. I'm totally fine if you don't. Do you know how many people attended that first Star Trek convention?
You know what? I do not.
I'm really curious. I do not. Because like, I could totally see it being like 15 people, but I could also totally see it being like 150 people. I have no clue. Because like,
attracted around 3,000 attendees.
Holy moly!
Significantly exceeding the organizer's initial estimate of 500.
Wow. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. 3,000? Jeez. Oh my gosh. I couldn't even imagine being a fan of this thing, right? And you probably have, you follow the fanzines, you follow the fan vids, you probably have a close-knit community around you of Star Trek fans. And then you go to this convention and there's 3,000 people, 2,999 other people that all share this same special interest. I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like. as an holistic person, I can't imagine, but like just as an holistic person, the concept of that excites me in general.
So I'm looking on Memory Alpha, which is basically Trek Wikipedia. It says that episodes were also screened, the original pilot, The Cage, and a blooper reel. And a number of Trek-connected guest speakers also attending included Trek's creator, Gene Roddenberry.
Wow.
Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who you've only watched DS9, that's Laxana Troy, and the voice of the computer.
Right.
And the original Nurse Chapel. DC Fontana, who was one of the writers, as well as science fiction author Isaac Asimov.
Huh? That's dope.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Now, for some reason, my brain is going, science fiction author, are they problematic? I don't know why.
Oh, yeah, most of them fucking are.
Yeah. Like, as soon as I hear, like, male presenting science fiction author, I'm like, unless you're Gene Roddenberry. And even if you're Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, yeah, he was problematic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he had his issues. So, the first convention in 1972, which I fully believe would not have been viable without these fanzines, a lot of which included gay fanfic. You see why I'm saying gay fanfic save Star Trek?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, hey, keeping this stuff going.
Real quick, could you imagine a Today's Lucky Winner convention?
That would be so silly.
That would be cool. That would be wild.
That would be so silly.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay. So, the way people stayed connected, there are two women in Trek history that I would be remiss not to mention, because they are part of the reason that organizing this stuff was even possible, and they helped new Trekkies get connected pre-internet.
Hell yeah.
So two women, Jean Lorraine and Jacqueline Lichtenberg, published the book Star Trek Lives! ! Which I'm pretty sure we have an old copy of it downstairs. I found it at work at the comic book store. Someone was selling their old stuff, and I was like, mine. So this book was like a Bible for the fandom, and it was a how-to telling you everything you needed to know about conventions, joining fan clubs, the zines that existed, making your own zines, how to create all of it yourself. This book was so popular, it's had 8 different printings.
Wow. There are so many fandoms I wish had a handbook on the fandom. And wow.
Right?
That's amazing.
So brilliant. Pre-internet, they made this for, it's like, hey, welcome, new Trekkie. Here's how you get involved.
Yeah, they should do that for Sonic.
Yeah, for sure. That one's an intimidating one. James and I, this weekend, are getting into wrestling this last weekend. And I was, you know, I have an autistic friend, Raven. Hi, Raven. Who is very into wrestling, so I was asking her some questions. But yeah, that would also be a one that having a handbook would be pretty helpful.
Absolutely, yeah, I would love that.
So Jacqueline Lichtenberg also created something called the Star Trek Welcomity, and she did this with Gene Roddenberry's blessing, which acted as a guide for newcomers to find Trekkies near them, essentially, to connect with. So both women actually wrote whole storylines worth of fanfic.
Wow.
They were prolific fanfic authors. And Laura actually ended up writing Trek novels professionally.
Oh, cool. Oh, my God. Wow. I could. The journey that must have been for her to go from writing for a fanzine all the way to becoming an official writer for that. Wow.
Yeah. Well, did you know that Star Trek used to have, like, basically, they were open for spec scripts all the time. Anyone used to be able to send in a script. So Brian Fuller, who was like just a guy who was a Trekkie and had some good Trek ideas, got some Star Trek The Next Generation scripts accepted. And they're like, hey, do you want to be in the writer's room for this new spinoff we're doing called Deep Space Nine?
That would be cool.
Yeah. Oh, so it just went from, yeah, I swear to God, if they had still been doing it, I would have sent in so many Lower deck scripts, they would have gotten sick of me and asked me to stop.
Oh, yeah. If they were doing an Elden Ring 2 and they were like, hey, George R.R. Martin needs some help writing this next one, fans, I would be like, listen, I got you. I got you.
with Lower Decks specifically, I was so upset that they didn't accept spec scripts anymore, because I was like, this is the Star Trek I was born to write. Oh. There's so many fucking dick jokes.
Honestly, sometimes we would watch an episode of Lower Decks and I would be like, did Brianne write this? Did she write this? It seems like you wrote this.
So, Jean Laura, one of these women, she did an interview with Trek.com that straight up made me cry, in a good way. So, there's a quote from her that says, within Trek fandom, women were the creators they were rarely allowed to be elsewhere. Women created Trek fandom, which eventually morphed into media fandom. It was our little world, with no need to ask permission of men to do what we did there. Heck, we were the Amazons of our own little island. And media fandom to this day is a female-dominated world.
I love that. That's amazing.
And she's absolutely right. Like, people of any gender obviously can engage in fanfic and write fanfic. But ultimately, it was largely girls. Largely, like, in the internet age, it became teen girls, which I was a part of very early on. There is some Star Trek fanfic floating around some God knows where that I wrote as a teen. And a lot of the first writing I ever did was fanfic, because those are the things that got me wanting to make my own art, right? So yeah, this is my argument that the gay fanfic saved Star Trek, and I think fanfic is a beautiful thing, and I love Star Trek, and I love how it is here today, and there's the most Star Trek that's ever been on TV, ever, yeah, in my life, and I would like to think that horny autistic women in the 60s and 70s are the reason that I have this today, and I'm gonna cry because it's Star Trek. But it just makes me feel like I'm part of something bigger and beautiful, and I just get really excited when an older person sees my Star Trek tattoos and gets really excited and asks me who my favorite captain is, asks me what my favorite movie is, and it is, okay, some conservatives like Star Trek, but a lot of the time, looking the way I do, if they're engaging with me about Star Trek, I know this person is probably safe.
Right. And if you're a conservative that likes Star Trek,
what the fuck are you doing?
Figure yourself out. Like,
yeah,
pick one.
Yeah, get out of here. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Get out of here.
It's safe for
go,
you. Get
go
out of here.
Go figure yourself out.
Like, we don't want you here.
Yeah.
Also, work on your media literacy, dickhead.
Right.
Like, what, like, the fuck?
You clearly don't understand the show if you're, like, it's, like, I feel like it's incongruent. You can't be both. Not really.
My abuelita was one of the people I would watch Star Trek with. The biggest self-hating conservative that you can imagine. Yeah. And she watched Star Trek. So I don't know. But yeah, I love Star Trek. I love fanfic. I love Trek history. And I finally got to do an info dump piece about it. So,
well, good job. I learned a lot. And it kind of makes me want to, I've never written a fanfic, but it kind of makes me want to look and see, you know, what are some of my favorite stories and IPs that I have, you know, loved and been parts of those fandoms of over the years. Maybe I'll write some slash fic. I don't know.
And some fic is just so silly in a way that I mean really positively, that when you have trouble writing and you want to practice just like describing things, writing in voice, like getting someone's voice right with fanfic, you have to really think about how you're writing it, because this person already does have a voice that you've heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you can have ridiculous things. Like, what if they all time traveled and went to a Whataburger?
Oh, like, I like the
I've
idea
read,
of that.
I've read some silly fucking fanfic. There is a lot of fanfic where Buffy crosses over with different like stuff of the time. Like, I remember reading some Buffy Charmed fanfic.
Yeah.
I was like, yes. Just a fun adventure where someone said, if these two crossed over, I think it would go a little something like this.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. So, like, fanfic, I think, is great to practice writing in general and for you to kind of stretch your imagination.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. And I really you know, I believed it in my heart of hearts, but I didn't know when we first started the episode. But now I feel like I do know gay fanfic absolutely did save Star Trek. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I mean, where would it be?
But yeah, that's the episode. I got to go write some Kirk M. Preg fanfic. So.
Inflation. Impreg?
No, just Empreg.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
He's going to get knocked up.
You're going to have Mr. Tingle review that one or nah?
No, I think... Oh, so, you know, there's a theory that he might be Chris Pine, right? That Chuck Tingle might be Chris Pine. Yeah, I don't personally believe it, but the ongoing goof is that people think Chuck Tingle is Chris Pine. So I don't know. Would a Captain Kirk like my Kirk Empreg fanfic? If he's Chuck Tingle, yeah.
Yeah, if he's Chuck Tingle, he would.
Yeah, if he's Chuck Tingle, I think he would. I would prove love is real. Hey y'all, if you like this episode, you can thank our Patreon supporters like Jill Shambaugh, Bethany Glass, Percy, Chamberlain Foreman, Nanya B, Kate Mishikus, K Genius, Chibs 1012, Dave Perrell, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus, Lutzi, Helen Clifford, B Trossler, Sewing Seraph, Rachelson, Fintago, and Randy Lovings. Now, I respect you all. This housekeeping section is going to be short because I underestimated a weed gummy and had a minor freak out at the garden center, okay? So it's going to be short. But you know how to support us. We don't take ads, we don't pay for ads, and you can tell your friends about the show. It's an easy way to do it. Review, rate the show, subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. That helps the algorithm show us to folks who might like us and makes the show look more active, which also helps more people decide to click on an episode and give it a listen. If you're in a place to support us financially, you can go to the show details to look for the Mixnomer Patreon. And there you have different tiers you can support us at, and you get bonus content for all of the stuff we're doing currently, all of the stuff we're about to do, and anything we might do in the future. If you want to come hang out with us, you can also find a link to our Discord server, which is very fun, good vibes. Current conversation today has been the disappointment in the new Lilo and Stitch live-action film. So that's been an interesting discussion. We all seem to like Lilo and Stitch quite a bit. But anyway, I'm going to try to go come down from my bad experience of being too high and autistic at a big nursery and go get a little snacky snack, okay? I'll talk to you next time. Clever sign off.